Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Ana Mateo brings us a new episode of Words and Their Stories. You will also hear two reports from Phil Dierking. And Jonathan Evans has a story about a rare and costly bird species. But first, Mario Ritter has a report on the influence that Chinese tourists are having on small European towns.
Civita di Bagno Reggio is an ancient Italian village about 120 kilometers north of Rome. It was built on a flat area of volcanic rock high above the Tiber River Valley. Civita is known as a dying city, with a year-round population of just 7. For many years, people there had long believed that the world economy had passed them by. They had become used to seeing their young people leave for jobs in other places. But a wave of tourists, mostly from China, is helping the town's economy. This year, Civita expects 800,000 visitors. From small villages to famous capital cities, Europe has seen a sharp increase in Chinese tourists. The China Tourism Academy and the Chinese online travel agency Ctrip say more than 6 million Chinese citizens visited European countries in 2017. European officials estimate the number to be close to 10 million. The most popular countries to visit among Chinese tourists are Britain, Italy, France, Germany, and Spain. Eurostat, the European Union's statistics agency, says Chinese tourism in Europe has increased by 200% in the past 10 years. Those numbers are expected to increase this year, which has been named China-EU Tourism Year. The marketing effort was jointly launched by the European Union and China. Europeans are both pleased with and concerned about the growing number of visitors. The increase has stressed some European airports and is adding to development issues in some areas. Some observers have different concerns. Stratfor, an American research company, has called Chinese tourism an unexpected tool that China can use to exert its influence. The group added that the huge rise in the number of outbound Chinese travelers means their combined economic weight can have sharp consequences. Stratfor also said the Chinese government's ability to give countries approved destination status is a way to control where Chinese tourists can and will go. That is how the government greatly reduced the number of Chinese people traveling to South Korea last year, Stratfor noted. Experts saw the move as an effort to punish South Korea for deploying an American-made missile defense system that the Chinese government opposed. The European Union, however, sees the rise in Chinese visitors as important to the economy. The EU Commission said, "Tourism has the potential to contribute towards employment and economic growth, as well as to development in rural areas." 45-year-old Roberta Mencarelli oversees a bed and breakfast hotel and restaurant in Bagno Reggio, a few kilometers west of Civita di Bagno Reggio. She said that most of the visitors to the area are Chinese. They have brought money into the town, and the tourism has increased the energy here, she said. It has also increased the number of businesses. There used to be only 2 restaurants in town, she said. Now there are 10. Mencarelli said she has even begun learning some Mandarin Chinese to help her communicate with visitors. The increase of visitors has brought much more money to the small number of people who live in Civita. Not everyone is happy about it. An old woman who gave her name as Giovanna described the inflow as an invasion. "Too many people," she said. Her complaint is similar to those heard in some of Europe's most famous cities, like Venice, Barcelona, and Paris. Critics say they are already overcrowded during the tourist season. They say the additional waves of visitors from China and other Asian countries have hurt the quality of life of local people and strained infrastructure. Wolfgang Arlt is director of the China Outbound Tourism Research Institute. He wrote in a recent blog entry that there is a growing number of sometimes violent protests by local people in some places popular with travelers. Only 7% of Chinese citizens have passports, compared to 40% of Americans. That means, industry experts say, that the possibility for even more growth in Chinese tourism is huge. Arlt's research group says the number of trips taken by Chinese travelers will increase from 145 million in 2017 to 400 million by 2030. If those numbers are correct, then Chinese would make up 1/4 of world tourism by that year. I'm Mario Ritter.
The 2018 Atlantic hurricane season started 2 months ago, but many Texas families are still struggling to recover from the damage caused by a major storm last year. The storm, named Hurricane Harvey, hit Houston and areas around the city. Harvey caused flooding in many neighborhoods. Samantha and Justin Scott and their 3 children live in the Bear Creek Village neighborhood just west of Houston. For Samantha Scott, trying to get their life back to normal has been a frightening experience. "I think when my kids think back to the past year of our life, especially our oldest, I think he's just going to remember that I cried a lot," she said. The Scotts are still rebuilding their home after the floods caused by Hurricane Harvey. It was one of the wettest storm systems in the history of the United States. When Harvey hit Texas, it was a Category 4 hurricane. This was the first such storm to strike the U.S. mainland since 2005. For the past year, Samantha and the children temporarily moved away from their home, while Justin stayed behind to work on the house. Their youngest child was only a few months old when their home was flooded last August. "I pretty much missed out on the better half of the first year of his life," Scott said of his youngest child, Kyle. "Missing things like watching him walk for the first time, watching him do a lot of the stuff that kids do for the first time, I missed." The Scotts are not alone. Storm damage can be seen in nearby homes. "It just hits you. It's like a slap in the face every single time. It's like it doesn't end. Like the hurricane is just continuing," Samantha said. Throughout the Bear Creek neighborhood, many homes have for sale signs and building materials along the side of the street. On one street, a neighbor said only 3 families decided to stay and the others wanted to sell their homes. For the families who stayed, rebuilding has been slow. Many people do not have flood insurance. The Scott's neighbor, Joe Franz, moved to Bear Creek in 1994. 5 years ago, he canceled his flood insurance policy to save money. Hurricane Harvey was the first time floodwaters entered his home. Franz said he had to take everything out of the house and leave it by the street like the rest of the neighborhood. Bear Creek flooded because it is next to a man-made lake, which supplies water to homes and businesses. Other homes in the Houston area flooded because they sit in low-lying areas. "Floodplains are like little valleys, and they can hold just about anything nature can throw at us, including Harvey," noted John Jacob of Texas A&M University. Jacob said, "Preventing major flooding will take time. 50 years from now, we need to be able to reclaim all these floodplains. So, part of this can be through buyout with federal money. But the other part is just going to be awareness," he said. Jacob said there will be other storms and floods in Houston. So when people are buying a home, they should study maps of land height and look for houses built on high ground. "Another solution is to raise houses," Jacob said. He lives in a house that has a 1-meter-high space underneath the home. For now, many people, like the Scotts, are stuck in their existing home. "This has kind of put us in a situation where we can't really afford just to pick up and leave," Justin said. But the Scott family is thankful for even a little progress. On the day they spoke with VOA, their new bedroom furniture arrived. It was the first night the family was together in their home since the floods hit. I'm Phil Dierking.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. On this show, we explore American idioms and expressions. We try to help you understand common expressions and how to use them in everyday speech. You know, at times in life, things just do not go our way. We all have days when nothing goes right. In fact, everything goes wrong. Mistakes, mishaps, and misfortune seem to follow us around. If you have a long period of bad luck, you could say you are snake bit. Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary claims that this usage of snake bit dates back to 1957. It does not say much about the history of the word, but getting bit by any animal would not be a sign of good luck. So perhaps the root of the term is that simple. If you are snake bit for a really long period of time, you may start to think that you are jinxed. The word jinx can be either a noun or a verb. As a noun, a jinx leads to bad luck and misfortune. If you jinx something, the verb form, you bring bad luck to something or someone. A jinx is like a curse. You really believe that everything you do will turn out badly. Even if you don't believe in curses, just thinking that something bad will happen to you might make it happen. Now, let's hear how these terms are used by two friends at a basketball game.
This has been a great game. There's only 5 minutes left, and the game is tied.
I wish our team would just score and pull ahead. Being tied is driving me crazy. It's a good thing I wore my lucky hat.
What are you talking about? There is no such thing as luck. We just need to play better than the other team.
Look, our team has been snake bit for weeks. We've lost our last 5 games. So they need all the help they can get.
Don't worry. There's no way we are going to lose this game.
Don't jinx us. Quick, knock on wood to break the jinx.
There's no such thing as a jinx, and I will not hit a piece of wood or anything else. I'm not superstitious.
Well, I am. There. Maybe that will break the curse.
You look foolish.
Really? Well, our team just scored.
Some sports lovers and many players are superstitious. It is a common part of the sporting culture. And we have a special word for players who are having a string of bad luck. We say they have the yips. Having the yips is a kind of nervous tension that affects the person's performance. For example, a baseball pitcher had a bad case of the yips. He could not find his strike zone. So his coach replaced him in the game with another player. Athletes and non-athletes alike can be snake bit. And some people just seem to be snake bit all the time. You could say they were born under a bad sign. That means they were born during an unlucky time of the year.
One, two. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl.
The bad sign in this expression relates to astrology. William Bell helped to write this song. He wanted to compose a blues song about astrology. If you were born under a bad sign, it means the stars were in a formation that have worked against you since birth. This is also where we get the expression, it just wasn't in the stars. But we'll save star expressions for another program. Keep in mind, being snake bit is more than just one unlucky thing happening to you. So getting dismissed from work can be an unlucky event. But if everything else in your life is going great, you would not say that you are snake bit. In order to be truly snake bit, you must have a series of failures or problems. And that's Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo.
small or large, costly and even rare birds can be found at a pet store in the American community of Falls Church, Virginia. And it is clear from the name of the store what kind of birds are available for sale. Parrots, 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 just parrots. The small business is filled with many bright-colored parrots, from cockatoos to giant macaws and small parakeets.
Hello.
Ed Willis is the owner of the pet store. Willis says he received his first parrot when he was 18 years old. Since then, he has not spent another day without a parrot. Willis says the birds make wonderful pets and can develop strong feelings toward people.
It's a unique partnership between a parrot and a person. They're independent, but they're still needy. They're happy to see you when you come home. It's a really special pet relationship.
Willis opened his store in 1988. Today, it is one of just two businesses in the Washington, D.C. area that only sell parrots. The hyacinth macaw, a rare parrot, costs almost $17,000. There are only about 6,500 of these birds left in the world. The parrot in Ed Willis's store is young and has a long life ahead of it. Macaws can live up to 100 years.
So from the neck up, they like to have their feathers ruffled. You can see, and she'll even put them up herself. And then from the neck down, they like you to smooth them.
Willis's arms are covered with claw marks and bites from holding and caring for the big birds.
Well, they're not really trying to hurt me. Sometimes it's just playfulness, and sometimes they're scared or they fall.
The store is a busy place. Children and adults alike come to the store to see the different kinds of parrots. But not all the birds at the store are for sale. Some have become like family to Willis and his daughter, Kelsey. One such bird is a cockatoo named Snowball. Willis says he got Snowball when the bird was small.
So Snowball is not really a typical cockatoo. He's actually very quiet and very friendly. A lot of the cockatoos are known for being extremely loud, and he has not been. So a lot of people are interested in this bird.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
For many people, the college admissions process can seem mysterious. But what college admissions officials want is not a secret. Schools present what they want in the form of big data. That information is available to anyone online. Students can use big data when seeking admission to colleges or universities, where they will be strong candidates. This increases their chances for admission and financial aid. Here is what college applicants should look for. Colleges provide admissions and financial aid statistics, called the Common Data Set, to satisfy the demands of education publishers, notes Lynn O'Shaughnessy, a college consultant. The information can be found by searching the college's name and the term Common Data Set, or at websites for comparing colleges. The statistics for each school include the cost to attend, how much student loan debt the average person builds up while in college, what percentage of applicants are accepted, and average class grades and test results of incoming first-year students. As an example, let's consider Stanford University in California. At Stanford, 75% of incoming students for the 2016 to 2017 school year had 700 or above on the mathematics part of the SAT. Also at Stanford, 94% of incoming students had grade point averages above 3.75. 4.0 is considered perfect, but higher grade point averages are possible. In addition, 95% of the new arrivals were in the top 10% of their high school class. Yet, having fine grades and test results do not guarantee admission to a top college. Stanford accepts just 5% of people who apply. But knowing about the students who were accepted can help applicants. They can stop thinking about unlikely choices for higher education and focus instead on schools where they are more likely to gain admission. Experts say having grades and test results that are above the school's average can help with both an applicant's chances of being accepted and getting financial aid. In the United States, the best financial aid deals do not always come from highly competitive schools or large public universities. Sometimes they come from smaller colleges that are trying harder to interest good applicants, says Vita Cohen, another college consultant. Information about how a school examines applicants can be found in the dataset's admissions factors. They show how each school rates 19 measures of admission, everything from class rank to after-school activities. Many schools, for example, think the difficulty of an applicant's high school classes and their grade point average are very important. Some schools consider standardized tests like the SAT as important, while others do not. Most U.S. colleges do not fully meet the financial needs of their students, even when federal student loans are considered. Families are expected to find the extra money themselves, often through parental or private student loans. The size of a student's need depends on how willing each school is to give them money. For example, the cost of attending New York University, or NYU, and the University of Southern California, or USC, is about the same, about $72,000 a year. USC, however, fully met the financial need of 80.4% of first-year students who received aid. NYU fully met the financial need of only 9.1% of its first-year aid recipients. Families who do not need student loans for school can still get the cost of a school reduced through something known as merit aid. Merit aid is less common at public and highly competitive schools that have many applicants. UCLA, for example, offered merit aid, which averaged $4,847, to only 2.6% of its first-year students. Cost is important, say most experts. They warn that while it is important to have a college education, you do not want to finish school with a large debt. I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for more stories and information from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.